Well, colleagues, welcome to this seminar in our series with the Hellenic Observatory. I'm delighted to introduce our speaker this evening, Dimitris Sotiropoulos, who's from the University of Athens. Dimitris is a highly respected political scientist working on Greece and Southeast Europe. He's published extensively, both in English and in Greek. He obtained his PhD from Yale University. And we're very fortunate that he has been with the Hellenic Observatory at the LSE on different periods and certainly currently with us. He is a research associate of the Hellenic Observatory, which we're very proud of. And this evening, his topic is what do Greek political elites think about Europe and the crisis? Preliminary results of recent survey research. Of course, I guess you're here because we all recognise that Greece and Europe has a certain topicality at the moment in the context of the elections. But we've lived through a number of years where a particular mindset, or possibly mindsets plural, have existed about Greece's place within the European Union. Whether that is about to change or not, it's important for us to understand what the mindset has been to this point, at least. As is usual, Dimitris is going to speak to us for perhaps 30, 40 minutes. There should be plenty of time for discussions afterwards. And before passing to Dimitris, I'm going to give you advance notice of some upcoming events. That is, the next seminar in this series will be here at the same time on the 3rd of February and will be given by Professor Panos Sakoglu, who is professor in the Athens University of Economics and Business, and who will be talking about the restructuring of the Greek economy 2010 to 2014. After that, on the 5th of February, so the same week, we have a public debate: what do the Greek elections mean for Greece's future? The following Thursday the 12th of February, we have the 14th annual lecture of the Hellenic Observatory, given by Yannis Tounaris, who is the governor of the Bank of Greece, the central bank, former minister of Greek finance, and he will be talking about the Greek economy, current developments and future prospects for the economy. Perhaps he'll be talking about current developments and future prospects of him personally, let's see. But in any event, we begin this evening with Dimitris' talk, which I'm very much looking forward to. Welcome back, Dimitri. You're always very welcome here, and we always benefit from your visits. We look forward to your talk, which is based on some research which has been supported by the Hellenic Observatory itself. Dimitri.
I thank Kevin for this kind invitation to talk to you about research which I have done with my colleague Yannis Tsirbas. Indeed, the Hellenic Observatory has supported this empirical survey of opinions of members of the Greek National Parliament. And I also wish to say that Kevin personally, as you know, has supported research on the relations between Europe and Greece. The rest of the colleagues in this research unit, the Hellenic Observatory, are deeply interested and may want to offer also criticism on what I'm going to say. I will present first a general survey of what we know about Greek political elites in the European Union, and then with the help of a PowerPoint presentation, I will offer to you the first results of this empirical survey. As you know, in Europe, it has become very significant to study national political elites, given that the national political elites are major drivers of the European agenda. We are still in the era of intergovernmentalism. National elites are important to study also because, except for being drivers of the European integration, they are legitimating intermediaries between the European authorities on the one hand and the national publics on the other hand. Past research on national elites has taken place in many countries, including Greece, and it is a developed area of study. The presumption, of course, is that national elites influence public opinion, but vice versa, and vice versa. That is to say, while national elites influence public opinion regarding how the European Union and the integration process itself evolves, the public opinion puts constraints on what are the choices of elites. The case of Greece is particularly interesting because, as I will explain in a minute, until 2010, there was less interest in the European Union affairs as one might have thought, and we have found out this on the basis of previous research, by which I mean interest among political elites to form an opinion about European integration issues. After 2010, for obvious reasons, we have an increased interest among national political elites regarding the process of European integration and the way the European Union has handled the economic crisis. Over time, Greek political parties have shifted their position regarding the European Union. Very briefly, as you know, the New Democracy Party has supported the European integration from the beginning. The Socialist Party, PASOK, has shifted over time. Until 1986, the Socialist Party was ambivalent about whether it wanted to fully adopt a pro-integration position, and then since 1986, it has become one of the most fervent supporters of European integration in Greece. The Communist Party, the KKE, has been, on the other hand, a party which has adamantly rejected European integration for the last 4 decades, actually. And the party, which we know now by the name Syriza, had a parent organization. This was the Coalition of the Left and Progress. It is interesting to note that the Coalition of the Left and Progress, which was the parent of organization of Syriza, has also shifted its positions. Namely, in the 1990s, the party initially was in favor of European integration, and then one would see that the party would take a more agnostic position, for instance, regarding the way it voted when the Treaty of Amsterdam and the Treaty of Nice was debated in the Greek Parliament. And then gradually there was another shift towards a position of the Synaspismos, the Coalition of the Left and Progress, that is more negative, and that is reflected in the way the party has voted in the Greek Parliament on several occasions. Over the last 2 years, the party has shifted again to a more moderate pro-European position. One, of course, has to take into account intra-party differences of opinion. I will not go into this, but within the Socialist Party and within the Coalition of the Left and Progress and within Syriza today, as you know, there are differences regarding the stand of these parties towards various aspects of the European institutions and European Union policies. Over time, if I can summarize what I have said, we have not a rejection of the EU, but progressively, I think, a larger and larger support of the European integration of by the Greek public, almost until the mid the period of the 2005-2006, when Euroscepticism started rising, as it happened, as you know, in other European member states. Regarding parties, over time we have a convergence of political parties and consequently also of political elites towards a more pro-EU position. However, research which several colleagues of mine and myself have done regarding whether national political elites until 2010 understood and were deeply interested or not in the day-to-day functioning of the European Union and the future of the European Union shows that the European Union affairs were seen as probably marginal compared to domestic politics. So this was reflected in the little attention Greek mass media paid to European affairs. It was also reflected in the fact that no referendum has ever taken place in Greece regarding any EU treaty or the accession of Greece to the EC or to the Eurozone. And also, the European Union Affairs Committee, which is a permanent parliamentary committee of the Greek Parliament, has played a minor role. Even after the adoption of the Lisbon Treaty, which, as you know, has given additional opportunities to national parliaments to play a more important role in shaping European Union policies. Since 2010, EU affairs and the relations between EU and Greece have become a major issue. They are at the epicenter of Greek politics, and there are obvious reasons for this. There has been research trying to determine what are the causes of the different perceptions of national political elites, not only in Greece, but in other European countries regarding the European Union. To make a long story short, there are three research hypotheses on this, on how to explain variation of perceptions of the national political elites and political parties towards the European Union. First approach says that by using self-placement on the left to right scale, we can find out how these differences of opinion on European Union institutions and also on European Union policies can be accounted for. A second research hypothesis says that we should be looking at the center and the periphery of each national party system. And parties which are placed in the center of a party system are more pro-European. Chances are that they have been in government. Chances are that they don't need to distinguish themselves from other parties by taking up an anti-EU stance. The last approach, a third approach, says that perceptions of the EU among national political elites and also the stand which parties take depends actually on whether a party is in the government or is in the opposition. Governing parties, governing alone or in a coalition, tend to take a more positive stance towards European Union institutions and processes, and that is not true for parties which are in the opposition. Obviously, parties may change depending on whether they are in government or in the opposition. Having made this general introduction, let me go on with the concepts we have used in this empirical research, in this attitudinal survey. Following this transparency, you may see that we would like to do research on three concepts: identity, representation, scope of governance. The first one has to do with the formation of national and European identities among political elites. There are various ways to measure identity. We do not subscribe to an ascribed understanding of identity. Identity is achieved, identity is constructed, and has to do, in terms of operationalizing this concept, with the attachment of members of parliament to different political communities, such as their electoral district, the nation, and the European Union. And also perceived threats to Europe. Again, this is very well known. One may study identity in a framework where external challenges to identity are underlined. So depending on whom you consider to be your enemy, you formulate your identity. Representation, which is our second concept, has to do with the degree to which our respondents believe that European institutions take into account the national interests of member states of the European Union, the extent to which also respondents trust institutions. Scope of governance is our third concept, and the basic idea here is the eternal debate on how and whether and how policy making competences should be allocated to the EU level, to the national level, or to the subnational level. And we also study the role of European Union institutions today and in the future, and how deep European integration should become in the future. The last part of this PowerPoint presentation will be on the effects of the crisis on the perceptions of MPs regarding European integration, and how they evaluate the way European institutions handled the crisis. This research is not a research that is done exclusively in Greece. It is a research which in the future will produce comparative results, because it belongs to a wider project, a project which uses the same standardized questionnaire translated in different languages in 10 different European Union member states. And I must repeat that we are happy that the Hellenic Observatory has supported research in Greece. It is a research which will also produce results that are useful to make comparisons across time. This is because a battery of questions we used in 2014 in this standardized questionnaire, administered, if I can use this term, to Greek MPs, were questions already used in 2007 in the context of another project, the title of which was Integrated and United. That was a project that surveyed the attitudes of national political elites, but also masses, in 15 European Union countries. Our prime concern was to make our sample representative. A general agreement among the 10 research teams working in 10 different European countries was to work on the basis of a quota sample. So we sampled on the basis of party, gender, and also on the criterion of whether an MP was a newcomer or not a newcomer. Why? Because, as you probably know, the year 2012 was a year of tremendous change in the Greek political elite. 50% of the MPs elected in June 2012 were newcomers to the Greek parliament. Our effort was to obtain as many interviews as possible. The target was 80 interviews. We obtained 74 interviews. This is one-fourth of the Greek parliament. Don't try this. It has been an impossible task. It took us 6 months. Between April and October 2014, we approached approximately 200 out of the 300 members of parliament, using all tools Greek tradition has supplied us with, and I let your imagination run wild about this. And eventually we were successful, because indeed we were very demanding. These were face-to-face interviews, and we did not settle for anything else, such as handing the questionnaire to them so that themselves, meaning their secretaries, would fill out the answers. We would insist on a face-to-face interview, and we had this result in 69 face-to-face interviews and 5 telephone interviews. We used the same sampling requirements as our colleagues in 9 other European Union countries did, and as you see from this table, our sample is pretty much reflecting the composition of the Greek parliament as far as the sampled MPs of New Democracy, Syriza, PASOK, ANEL, and even the neo-Nazi party, GD, the Golden Dawn, is concerned. We had a bit more, a few more answers than expected from the reformist left party, DIMAR. Of course, no answers from the Communist Party of Greece, which rejected the same call 5 years ago and 7 years ago, it never allows its members to offer any kind of interview. And we had a problem with the rising number of independent members of parliament. As you know, successful votes in the Greek parliament between June 2012 and last year have led to the result of gradually trimming the parliamentary majority of New Democracy and PASOK. So at the end, last December, the number of MPs who were not affiliated with any party reached the number of 25. That is unprecedented in the Greek parliament after 1974, after the fall of the colonist regime. And there we had a small problem trying to get hold of these people. Our sample is good regarding the composition, gender composition. The newcomers and the not the others who were people elected also before 2012, we had a larger number of newcomers. We also tried to distinguish between members of parliament who had served in government as ministers or deputy ministers in the past. And you see that 23% of our respondents were former ministers or deputy ministers, and in this 23% we count serving ministers. Yes, this is almost impossible to do. We have had interviews with ministers who were in power, serving ministers.
And is that broadly consistent with the proportion in parliament? 23% roughly might have...
It is consistent mostly with the parliamentary representation of New Democracy and PASOK, because these were the two parties which had government experience. This is a very interesting figure. We asked our respondents to place themselves on the familiar axis from ranging from left to right. 0 means extreme left, 10 means extreme right. The mean is close to 5. We have a total of 71 answers. And this will be used in the transparencies I will show in a minute, because self-placement from left to right is very important and has been important on Greek and also other, that is non-Greek, European surveys of national political elites. So our main explanatory variables are the political party affiliation of the MPs, the self-placement of the MPs on the left-right scale, which I've shown, experience in governing, which I have just explained, and parliamentary experience. Past research, particularly for Greece, not so much for other countries, has shown that self-placement on the left-right scale has been one of the most important determinants of perceptions on the European Union. Other explanatory variables which we have used in our questionnaires, and they have been included in questionnaires in surveys in other countries, have not worked as well. So typical questions refer to whether a member of parliament has frequent contacts with some kind of European institution, a commission, or has been invited and has worked with colleagues of his or hers in other European member states. This doesn't work. We have asked whether a member of parliament has lived in another European Union member state. This doesn't really work. So I list here for you only the 4 explanatory variables which have proved significant, and as I will show, the first 2 are the most important. So what do we want to look at? We would like to look at the European identity of MPs, whether they consider European institutions representative enough, what do they think about the scope of governance, and of course, what is their opinion regarding the way the EU has handled the crisis. Identity is measured here with regard to attachment of MPs to different territorial levels of political community, to the rational cost-benefit component of European identity, and to constructing European identity through perceptions of threats to the EU. So in the case of Greece, we see that relevant academic literature, which underlines that group membership is important, and believing in a vision of Europe is important in shaping identities does not seem to be so relevant. Greek members of parliament in this research and in past research really understand their identity in a purely rational terms. They make cost-benefit calculations, meaning they assess whether it is beneficial for Greece to have been a member of the European Union or not. Now, here there are the results for 2007 and 2014, and we see that the attachment to their electoral district and to Greece is higher than attachment to Europe, yet there is increase regarding the support of the attachment to electoral district and the other two territorial levels of community regarding what was the attachment in 2007. That is important because according to one piece of the academic literature, not studying only Greece but generally, posing the same question in other European nations, argued the following, that we should understand identity as formed in concentric circles. So basically we expected that someone would be more attached to his or her district, then less attached to the nation, and then less attached to Europe. This has proven wrong. In fact, there is another strand of the literature which says that the more attached you are to your nation state, if you are a citizen of a European Union member state, the higher the chances that you will be attached also to Europe. Okay, and this is, I think, borne out by this table. And it shows, I think, how at least two identities, the national identity and the European identity, are very closely correlated in the minds of respondents. And here is the rational calculation I was speaking to you about, taking everything into consideration. Would you say that Greece has, on balance, benefited or not from being a member of the European Union? And then we have a very large majority of our respondents saying that Greece has benefited. But it would be interesting to see if we have variation according to one of our explanatory variables. So here is a figure which shows whether this rational calculation is the same for members of parliament on the basis of how they place themselves on the left to right scale. So respondents on the center and on the right believe that Greece has on balance benefited from being a member of the EU. Respondents of the left are much less sure about this. Now, regarding threats to the EU, to the European Union, one could have a list of many threats, but I think one should look at the last two bars, which have to do with Turkey and Russia. Turkey and Russia are not considered threats by our respondents. By contrast, economic differences among member states and competition from emerging countries, meaning former developing countries such as China, Brazil, the BRICS, is considered a threat to the European Union, much more than nations which are close to Europe, geographically located close to Europe, like Turkey, an enlargement of the EU to include Turkey, and also the interference of Russia in European affairs. Let us take a closer look at this question. Is the EU a threat to Greece? This is an effort to see how the members of parliament understand what is a threat and what kind of threat that could be. So members of parliament are divided, I think, regarding whether the EU threatens economic growth, and this obviously has to do with the fact that we made our work, we made our did our research in 2014, after 5 years, that is, into the crisis. And the situation is different regarding the share of respondents who think that the European Union is a threat to the welfare system, to the quality of the democracy, and to the Greek culture. I think the last bar is significant because, as you know, if you follow literature on the academic and the press literature on Greece, there is an ongoing discussion for many years now regarding whether Greek culture has been, let's say, under constant siege by becoming more cosmopolitan, by becoming more Europeanized. Now, the EU as a threat to economic growth in Greece by party. Here we have significant differences among political parties. The New Democracy and the PASOK party do not believe that the EU is a threat to economic growth. The Independent Greeks, which is, as you know, a populist nationalist party to the right of New Democracy, the Nazis, and less so, Syriza believe that Syriza respondents believe that the EU is a threat to economic growth in Greece. Regarding opinions of the left, we have a similar image here where respondents who place themselves on the left consider the EU to be a threat to economic growth in Greece. This is one of the few occasions where we have statistical significance regarding the impact of the explanatory variable of first, having experience in government, second, having long-term parliamentary experience. People who have served as ministers do not believe that economic growth in Greece is threatened by the EU. The situation is a bit, I think, more even regarding parliamentary experience, but anyway, newcomers believe that the EU is a threat compared to what more experienced parliamentarians believe. Let's move quickly to representation. What is the trust, which what's the degree of trust which MPs grant to EU institutions? Are Greek interests represented valuably in EU institutions, and are MPs satisfied with democracy in the EU? Typically, in 2007 and also last year, we obtained this kind of result. There is higher trust in the European Parliament. There is much less trust in the executive organs or the executive institutions of the European Union, such as the European Commission and the Council of the EU. And let's see how this is split on the basis of party affiliation. European Parliament is trusted more by New Democracy, PASOK, and ANEL, and above all, DIMAR members of Parliament. The European Commission is much less trusted, and it is the least trusted by Syriza members of Parliament, and the Council of the European Union again is the least trusted by Syriza members of Parliament and the Golden Dawn members of Parliament. What is important here is to see the overall picture. In 2007, only 25% of our respondents believed that Greece's interests were not taken into account by those making decisions at the EU level. In 2014, we had a sharp increase in this opinion. So 84% of all Greek members of parliament, if our sample is voicing a general trend, believe that Greece's interests are basically not taken into account in decision-making at the EU level. Now, satisfaction with democracy, that is very low. Basically, Greek MPs believe that democracy works well in the European Union by a share of 37%, 36.5. Note that this is higher than what the Greek public opinion believes, and that is the middle bar where you see Greek public opinion data. And the both cases are lower than the average for the public opinion in the EU average for the 28 member states. Scope of EU governance, I will briefly go through policy formulation, strengthening or relaxing European integration. Should the EU become a state-like democracy, which means should the EU progress towards becoming a federal-type political system? And what is the preferred role for the European Commission? This is no surprise. In Greece and in other European Union member states, whenever this question is posed, we get more or less this kind of answer. Respondents at the mass or public level and at the level of elites believe that truly transnational issues are immigration and environmental policy, and these should be dealt with at the EU level. By contrast, truly national issues are healthcare and unemployment. It is surprising that banking and financial regulation is believed to be appropriately dealt with at the European level only by 48.6% of our respondents. I would have expected more. And regarding the last one, fighting crime, in other surveys in other countries, we see a higher higher share of respondents believing that this should be a more transnational issue, exactly because crime has become often a cross-border issue, if not a transnational issue. We asked our respondents whether the European unification has gone too far or should be strengthened. If you answer yes, it has gone too far, that means that you say, please put a hold on European unification. If you say no, it should be strengthened, you are a fanatic of further federalization of the EU political system. So here we have the respondents from the center and the right saying that unification should be strengthened. Respondents on the left, even though this is a statistically significant result, do not differ so much from respondents on the right and the center. Now, are you in favor of a state-like democracy with an EU-level government politically responsible to the European Parliament? Some people thought that we were pushing too much with this question. We basically ask whether European-wide government should be formed and the European Parliament should become a parliament that would function the way a national parliament functions. Here, we have a negative answer. 58% of our respondents said, no, this should not take place. And if we cut this result down by self-placement, on the left-right scale, we see that respondents in the center believe in this prospect, but no one else does. Respondents on the left do not, and there is even less support for this prospect among respondents who place themselves on the right. People who have had government experience agree. If respondents have no government experience, disagree sharply with this statement. Now, the role of the European Commission, as you know, is hotly debated in the academic literature. And here we have a divided sample. Although you could say that there are more respondents, more MPs who believe that the European Commission ought to become the true government of the European Union. Let's see how this shows when we divide our sample by left to right self-placement. Here again, as we in my previous transparency slide, we see that respondents in the center are much more supportive of this prospect of the European Commission becoming the true government of the European Union than respondents on the left or on the right. And let's come to the very final part of this presentation, which is to see how members of parliament assessed the way the European Union has handled the economic crisis. What was the role of the European institutions during the crisis? If you said it was zero, that was a very negative opinion. If you said it was 10, you gave grade 10, that was a high opinion of the way the European Commission, the European Council, and the European Central Bank handled the crisis. The mean scores are below 5, and that is the first result, which is negative. And we have now, by let's say the same issue, understood by party affiliation, the lowest scores regarding the way the European Commission, the European Council, and the European Central Bank handled the crisis are given by members of parliament who belong to Syriza. Note the 0.8 score given by Syriza parliamentarians to the way the ECB handled the crisis. The scores were higher in the answers and responses by the New Democracy and the PASOK members of parliament. Note, in contrast to what I have just said, how highly New Democracy parliamentarians assess the role of the European Central Bank. This is a very sharp contrast, because you have 6.4 as a mean score for New Democracy members of parliament. On the left-right scale, again, the same picture. The respondents on the left have a very negative opinion of how these three EU institutions handle the crisis. And as we go from left to right, approval increases. Here is a question which asked the members of parliament their opinion about actually what should have been done, what would be the best option for Greece and for Greece basically to have the crisis managed, to handle the crisis. And we gave them four options and asked them to rank them, rank this option. So here the majority of our respondents picked an intervention of the European Union in the economic crisis as their best option. The second most preferred option was a coordinated action of national governments. I think my very experienced colleague and co-author of this, who is Yanis Tsirbas, would argue that this is the way we should show the data. In my opinion, if you add the first choice and second choice for the coordinated action of national governments, then this comes as the most preferred option. So the least preferred option, of course, is the intervention of international financial institutions, by which we mean, of course, the IMF, but also other institutions which had a role in shaping public policies in Greece over the last 5 years, such as the OECD, for instance. How do members of parliament see the EU in 10 years of from now? So in the year 2014, 44% of 45% of our respondents believe that EU will be more integrated. And by contrast, only 28% believe that social differences will be smaller. So social inequality will rise, according to their opinion. And economic differences, not among wage earners and salary earners, but among countries, will also be lower, only according to 28% of our respondents. This is speculation.
Can I just check the entry? So yeah. The respondents could tick as many of these as they wish.
That is, they should tick the answers strongly agree or somewhat agree, somewhat disagree or strongly disagree for each one of those. Okay, it was the end of the interview and the end of the presentation. In a very few seconds, and that's why we asked them to think about the future. This part simply says that you may not only need to limit yourselves to an explanation based on left-right self-placement or political party affiliation, and you may want to find a set of opinions which, if held together, then could be used as an explanatory variable to interpret the rest of opinions which we have researched. So we're trying to do, an effort to create groups of our respondents using principal component analysis, and this shows that there are two rough strands of opinion, one which is a pro-European opinion, set of opinions, and should be contrasted to Euro-critical opinions, and the other one is the divide between federalists and the rest of MPs who are in favor of intergovernmentalism as a way to govern. Okay, and then we took these components and try to see if we use these components, can we predict whether our respondents will be affiliated, will belong to pro-bailout or anti-bailout parties? And we did obtain the following results. This is too technical. The major thing to retain from this is that indeed you can locate the members of parliament on the party system, okay, based on whether they are adopting a pro-European or a Euro-critical stance. So if you don't know the party to which a member of parliament belongs, and you ask him or her a set of opinions, and you say, here is a pro-European person, then you can also predict whether they, where exactly, where more or less they will fall on the party system, which is this result, okay? And so this is a pro-bailout, anti-bailout axis, which is dominated by a pro versus anti-European dimension. To conclude, Greek members of parliament are pro-European overall, but they are also critical of the way the European Union has handled the crisis. Political party affiliation and self-placement on the left-right scale determine the attitudes of members of parliament regarding identity, representation and scope of governance in the EU, as well as the role of the EU during the crisis. So the overall evaluation of EU institutions in the crisis is negative, but projections about the future of the EU are not that negative. It is wrong to believe that even the most skeptical members of the Greek Parliament would prefer to opt out of the European Union or the Eurozone. And finally, the main issue dimension that seems to differentiate Greek members of Parliament is dominated by a pro-European versus Eurocritical division, which corresponds to a pro-bailout versus anti-bailout division. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thank you, Dimitri, very much. As I say, we have plenty of time for discussions. Perhaps I could just start off with a comment that the one aspect that I'm intrigued by is the what seems to be relatively favourable attitude of most MPs, admittedly on the centre and right, towards the way in which EU institutions have handled the crisis. And if from the outside you were looking at what elites think and what public opinion thinks, this would seem to be I assume on the basis of what may happen on this Sunday, a rather stark contrast. That if I remember correctly from your portrayal of those who position themselves in the centre and the right, their attitudes towards the way in which the European Central Bank, the Commission and the Council of the European Union have handled the crisis were more favourable than negative. I think your mean scores were above 5, closer to 6 or something. That would seem to be quite a remarkable level of favourability in the context of the current crisis. So if you wish to say that parliamentary elites don't get it, then perhaps your survey research is somehow giving ammunition of a disconnect between what voters may be thinking and what parliamentarians believe. I want to comment on that to open us up.
Thank you for the comment. To start with, questions on the elections of Sunday should be addressed to Professors Ferdinand Economides and Monasteriotis. Okay, I'm not available for this. Regarding your question, you are right. However, one should also remember that parliamentarians on the centre and the right, including some of the independent members of parliament the early period of the second memorandum, voted for measures which were shaped, if not dictated, by these European institutions.
Yes.
Not
to have given those scores would have been to contradict themselves.
That's my point.
Good point.
But you are right. I was indeed stressing too much that there is a critical stance of Greek MPs regarding the way EU institutions handle the crisis. But as the figure in which we split their opinion on basis of part of left-right scale shows, the opinion of the left is much, much more critical. In fact, the left-wing MPs completely reject the way European institutions have handled the crisis.
Okay, good, thanks. Let's open it up. Bernard.
I was a bit intrigued by your definition of elites, which came down here in this case to being members of the national parliament. Now, you would have to admit that this is a rather transient population. You've actually captured some elites at a particular point in time. And I was wondering, you didn't perhaps make enough of the separation that you had between people who had experience, possibly in people who were new, because that might answer some of Kevin's points about, you know, whose opinion were they reflecting, and where had they come from, what was their heritage. That seems to me to be rather critical. And I'm not quite sure which way that one might work. I mean, the new people might be reflecting, almost by definition, sort of current happiness or unhappiness with the situation, and old established people might be kind of locked into a system which is no longer appropriate. I don't know. It might be that the older people have kind of a more experienced, were able to evaluate better, were less temperamental and opportunistic in what they were saying and thinking. So I think maybe you want to make a bit more about out of that distinction which you've also got. I wasn't also entirely convinced about, well, at least I was intrigued to know whether self-definitions of left-right overlapped with what we conventionally understand as sort of party affiliation, because on the whole you'd sort of say, well, this party is this or this party is that. And some of this might actually support your view about the peripheries also being the ones who were rather more anti. And another just a tiny question is, did the ECB count as an IFI, or was it part of the European institutional structure? I was a bit struck by that because they seem to not like the ECB, but when you were actually listening, when you mentioned the OECD and as an ex-employee of the OECD, I mean, one of the things which actually intrigues me is that the OECD sometimes sort of sidles itself, or certain bits of the OECD sort of sidle itself along and actually pretend that they're rather more progressive on certain things than certain other. IFIs. Depends which department you talk to, but nevertheless.
Okay, you have 12 questions there. are you happy to pause and take another question as well?
Yes, because I want to drink some water.
I think you'll find it's Uzo. Do you want to?
Two points. One is methodological. I like the fact that you interpret, the way you interpret the results show that there is a difference between attitudes towards the EU project as a vision for Greece, EU integration regardless of the current policy mix, and on the other hand, the current status quo in terms of the policy prescriptions and the way the institutions are configured at the moment. Because the way the questionnaire is configured, and I'm not sure whether that's a kind of a standardized questionnaire across all the countries under survey, is not quite clear. But I think the way you interpret it shows that the left, which registers its dissatisfaction against the current policy status quo, is very optimistic about the prospect of a revision of the status quo within the current framework of EU intervention. And that leads me to my second point, which is very interesting to see what the next parliament will think about, whether they will still, if Syriza comes to government and finds a wall against raised by EU institutions against its own policy proposals, whether this optimism will carry on with the next parliament, or whether that might interpret this scepticism against economic reforms might migrate as scepticism against the project of the European integration as a whole, and the fact that the European integration already embeds in itself certain orthodoxies, economic orthodoxies, and makes them immune to revision.
Mm-hmm. Want to take those, and then we'll have another round.
Thank you for the very interesting questions. Indeed, I take the word of my colleague Yanis Tsirbas, who, as I said, is a very experienced analyst. And here is the answer to your first question. We have tried to use the variable which is distinguishing between newcomers and members of parliament with experience across all those questions. And the only questions on which there was a significant impact of parliamentary experience were the few questions I showed. Mm-hmm. On almost all questions, having experience or becoming a new, or having no experience because you're a newcomer, played a less significant role than left, right, or political party.
Was the new there mean that you were newly in parliament at all, or was did experience mean you'd actually done more than having been in parliament before? I mean, were these fresh members of parliament?
Fresh members of parliament elected for the first time in the year 2012. And perhaps a reason why this contrast between experienced MPs and newcomers plays out an important role in a few questions may be that the majority of Syriza parliamentarians are newcomers.
Yeah.
Okay, because that party's electoral influence, as you know, shot up from 5% to 27%, so it elected massively newcomers.
But look at Conservatives post 2010. Conservative members of Parliament post 2010, who are vastly different in many ways, let us say, to long standings. They're far more radical in their views as well. So that's what I was trying to get.
Mm-hmm. Conservative members after.
So it would be within the same category then of New Democracy MPs.
Mm.
Are New Democracy MPs post 2012? More Eurosceptic or Europhile.
That's correct. That is correct. New Democracy newcomers are more skeptical.
Right.
Yes, okay. But not to the extent you see this among Syriza parliamentarians. Okay. I think Yanis Tsirbas and myself are insisting on the left-right self-placement as a major variable because, first of all, as I explained in the beginning of this talk, political parties have tended to shift over the last 20 years regarding their stand on European issues, and also because the thing is that among members of parliament of PASOK, you find respondents who place themselves on the left. And also, I think among members of parliament of New Democracy, you find many parliamentarians who place themselves on the center. So by affiliation by party seems to be more reliable. Yes, you were saying something.
I was almost thinking that I could see almost the opposite of that. That's why I would like to have seen that one exploited a bit more. Because if the new democracy people are different from the old new democracy people and are more anti and critical, plus you've got these various people on the left who are anti and critical, plus you've got things like the Golden Dawn, which is on the right but isn't it's highly critical. If you grouped people, I mean, one of my problems there is you had too many groups and not enough numbers, and you might have actually got with more, with fewer groups, you might have got more numbers, and then you might have started to get statistically significant differences. And one of the problems is that, I mean, I would seem to be running out of numbers very quickly.
Mm.
So actually trying to group people in these ways might give you some traction. It might give you some traction rather than just going for so many different organisations. Because I mean, as a statistician, I started to cringe, but I'm not going to talk about that.
So, are you happy to leave that as a comment?
Yeah, leave that as a comment for now.
Because I'm just conscious of time, that's all.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the ECB and the IFIs, OECD, as you know, in Greece, has played a prominent role in shaping public administration reform, and also in offering advice regarding welfare reform. Mm-hmm. So members of parliament who are critical of international organizations include the OECD in those organizations which they consider as intervening too much, for instance, in the public sector. Although personally I think the OECD advice given to the Greek government on public administration reform is very sensible.
Well, where was the ECB? Was the ECB...
The ECB was
as a European,
not as
a European.
Okay.
Because again, there's some difference.
Okay. Let's move on.
And yes, the European Union project is adhered to by most members of parliament. The European institutions are understood in a more critical fashion, not so much the European Parliament, okay? I think, following your argument, that if the government which emerged this Sunday from the elections has a political profile which is totally different from the political profile of all Greek governments, or for that matter, most governments of European member states, then we will have a test of the tolerance of European institutions in accommodating a quite longer range of profiles of governments, and that will show whether the European Union institutions can withstand an interlocutor who may not sound like anyone else who has been in Brussels before. So it will be a test for many European Union institutions. As for doing research on in the next parliament, please ask Kevin about future research.
We have a sense of waiting for the second coming, really. Sarah, do you want to?
Thanks. First of all, thank you very much for this insightful presentation. I just had two smaller questions. So one of your first slides showed the main variables that explained the attitudes of the MP, and I got the impression that the MP's attitude is mainly based on other persons' attitudes or grouped attitudes, like parties, government, even the left-right scale could be influenced by others' interpretation of. So I just want to ask you, what's your impression? Do they have any other ideas, or did they have any other perspectives on this that might have come from their opinion? And related to this, did you also have in your interviews open questions? So like to ask, for example, the one question where the EU has been perceived as a threat to economic growth in Greece, and to ask why they think this, so related to alternative options.
Okay, good. Can we take Robert?
I'll come back to Kevin's point about attitudes to the, or evaluation of the institution during the crisis. What struck me about that was that the same score is given to the European Commission, which I would have thought on balance had very little to do. The same score to the Commission as to the ECB, despite the fact that, you know, but the 4.1, well, how could that possibly be? So that was a curiosity.
Yeah.
The other thing is I wonder about this. Well, you didn't mention the word Eurozone once. I mean, you jumped to the crisis. But this is pitched at the level of the EU. And part of the background is Party X was pro-EU in the 80s, and Party Y was against it. But these positions, of course, were pure notion. Well, rhetorical. It's in favour of Europe. In favour of European integration. It's pure notion. Once you're in the Eurozone, it ain't notion. It's for real, in terms of the effects on your society. And so the research seemed to, in a sense, conflate the EU aspect, which is, as I say, to some extent, very oblique. And then, by implication, at least Eurozone matters, which are very, very real. Now take this question, for example, about do you believe, are you in favour of European unification? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Seems to me, stated in that way with a question mark, doesn't get you very far unless you go on to say, on what basis? For example, if you're talking about political union in the Eurozone, in that sense of unification, do you mean on the basis in which there is to be an equalisation of debts and a scenario in which the main surplus country, Germany, is going to accept taking action to cease to be a surplus country at some point? Because most unions don't work unless surplus countries sometimes become deficit countries. Do you support it in that scenario? Or if you're not going to have those corrected to debt, then because you'd be going to be against it. But there has to be some
context
for that. And just to end with this, that you talked about Sunday's test and what may come from Sunday's people. We have a test before Sunday. We have a test on Thursday with the announcement of QE in Frankfurt. And what we're led to expect is that there's going to be a decision to have QE, but not on the basis of shared risks, on the basis of national central banks being needed to which it works. This will be an announcement that the monetary union is not ever going to be a monetary union. This is a step back from monetary union. And the position therefore poses is, does Greece really want to be part of monetary union? Which is not a monetary union. That's never going to be. I mean, so it's these outside variables, isn't it? These higher, they go well beyond Greece, that are about the system and how it's going to operate. Unless you, to come back to Kevin's point, which I said, unless you actually discuss a context, then of course all of these things become rather, perhaps even, of modest importance.
Please, yes, sorry.
Okay. Regarding your two points, I did not define the concepts for our respondents. We asked them to define for themselves and not tell us what is left, what is right, and we asked them to place themselves on the left-right scale. This is a typical question asked, as you know, in many surveys. And generally, we have found that this kind of question works. So they don't reflect what other people think about what is left or right. They define for themselves whether they place themselves. It's a bit tricky, but if you repeat this question in multiple surveys, for instance, public opinion surveys, you do see how changes can be registered, and they are very interesting changes. There was one open question. Generally, members of parliament want to talk, as you know, but we don't want them to talk because they sometimes offer generalities, to put it mildly. And there was one question which was the following. If you think that unification in the EU should be strengthened, or you think a contract has gone too far, why do you say so? Okay, and the people who suggested, so they were, we asked them why, and the people who said the unification should go on offered the expected arguments that the European economy cannot compete unless it is consisting of more closely related and interlinked economies, and there are geopolitical threats, so more unification will help European Union member states to survive better in the global in the global scene later. And then the one later on, and the ones who were opposed to further unification also offered the arguments that the European Union has been very intrusive into national politics, and they don't want this to go on anymore. Now, regarding putting the question to, which was to put things in context, this was a research which took place in these 10 different European Union member states between April and October last year. So it was not the current context, but the earlier context, which was the time of the European Parliament elections, and we controlled, Yanis Tsirbas and myself controlled for responses we got before the European Parliament elections and after, and there was no statistical significance. The same score for European Commission and the ECB. Well, this may reflect, if I may say so, a less than subtle, a less than complex understanding of how European Union and Eurozone institutions work on the side of members of Parliament. This is a general answer I'm offering to you. In the eyes of a typical Greek voter, in the eyes of a typical Greek member of Parliament, the Eurozone and the European Union, if not identified, are very closely linked. And the questioner was mostly geared towards obtaining answers about the European Union, because we had 10 countries in this comparative work, and there were countries which are not members of the Eurozone.
If yes. I could just add to that,
sure.
Perhaps there may be an Olli Rehn effect in the sense that in the period when you were asking the questions, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, he was the Commissioner for Economic and Monetary Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps...
he was before because he stepped out. Because he went into
okay.
He stepped
okay.
out
okay.
After the...
He stepped out to become one.
Yes.
And he is one now, so he's now drawing two salaries plus a fat pension. Did the questionnaire actually, when he talked about these European institutions versus IFIs, did he just use European institutions and IFIs, or did he answer this question which we were posing here? Did he distinguish when he talked about the European Parliament? You said
yes, it
distinguished. Did he say the European Parliament, the European Commission, the ECB, and if you break it down, do you actually find differences, which are the kind of differences which we, I think, we're getting here?
The questions were very specific on particular institutions.
That's why I'm wondering whether you sort of want to recombine some of these things. In other words,
yeah.
The Commission might be relatively benign, the Parliament was perhaps extremely benign, I don't know. The OECD was somewhere in the middle. The ECB was right down there with sort of the worst World Bank in the worst World Bank days or something like that.
The same research conducted in 2007 showed that actually across Europe, the European Parliament was understood as a much more benign institution than the executive, let's say, or decision-making organs. At the time, in 2007, we had not added the ECB. We did this time. Regarding the ECB, you are right, Thursday is a major day for European Union politics. I understand that we may not be as pessimistic as you are, if I have understood your point, because the quantitative easing may be shared by 30 or 40% by the ECB, and the rest may be accorded to national banks. That's what I read. Is that correct? So in that case, all is not lost regarding the monetary union. It depends on how much will be the percentage share that the ECB will hold in this game. No?
No.
No? I'm reading the wrong papers again?
We are the Germans, and we know what we want.
We're not going to let that go through, for some reason.
So all the quantitative easing will be done with the responsibility of national banks. Central banks.
We will find out.
Yes.
Okay, should we move on? Other points, other comments, questions? Vasily.
I have a few statistical questions, but I'll leave them. The title of the project is about parliamentary elites. And I thought, when I think about elites, I don't think about the new elected MPs of Syriza. Or of Golden Dawn. In many respects, they're not part of the elite. Either, you know, they also don't identify with the elite, but they don't have the access, the knowledge, you know, information, whatever that would qualify them as an elite, the way I understand it, not being a political scientist. So I wonder whether this then. So we're talking about sort of opinions of MPs, and not MPs after 2012 being much more representative of Greek society than they were before, in the sense that they're less part of an elite, of an established elite, which says it's related back to grandparents and things like that. And then the follow-up question, partly relating to this, you know, to observations like that they trust the same, the ECB and the, or the assign the same responsibility to the ECB and the Commission. Also was struck by this, by the 34% of MPs think that the EU is a threat to the achievements of the welfare state in Greece, and I was puzzled, especially, you know, who thinks there's achievements of the welfare state that can be threatened in the first place. So my question is this more about... not about perception of elites, but perceptions of Greece as represented in the parliament. And I don't know what that means for the research, but at least that, you know, this is not necessarily an elite view, but rather, you know, an aggregate view of people that are in the parliament after 2012. I guess the distinction of what Bernard was asking earlier about the old comers and the newcomers may clarify that a bit. But of course, there may be newcomers that are also, you know, the elite is also producing itself, you know, accepting new members. So whether you would be, you know, able to separate between who me and you, let's say, would identify as part of a potential part of an establishment versus people who are not. Yeah, and then you would have differences there to study the elite rather than the composition of the parties. Does make sense?
You're answering the question.
So the concept of elites is used here in the traditional sociological way. I refer to the definitions of Pareto and Mosca in the end of the 19th century. We understand elites in a purely, analytical fashion, by which we mean individuals who are at the height of an organization or a profession. And the study of political elites is a traditional topic in political science and involves three kinds of people: ministers, members of parliament, or political appointees, such as general secretaries of ministers or advisors to ministers. And they are very hard to catch, And I suspect you also, and you will tell me later, what are the statistical problems with this. And thank you also for your points, because we have been able to obtain only 76, let's say, interviews. So elites are not the establishment. We don't use the concept of elites as along the establishment, anti-establishment axis. Regarding to the voters of Syriza, the members of the parliamentary group of Syriza are an elite in this non-evaluative but analytical understanding of the world. The welfare state. You're right about the welfare state. I was also surprised to see that respondents believe that the EU is a threat to the Greek welfare state, but you know better than I do that first there is a stereotype about the Greek welfare state. There is an ideology which says that the welfare state was doing very well or almost well before the crisis started, and it was protecting the Greek population, whereas as members of this institution have shown, it was an uneven, very unfair and very inefficient welfare state. So the answer which you spotted should be understood in the context, coming back to your idea, in the context of respondents who have seen that, particularly in public healthcare, there have been severe cuts in social spending in Greece, and also there's even less protection than it used to be in the past, notwithstanding that the social protection we used to offer in the past was reproducing social inequalities. So to make a long story short, there is a false hegemonic dominant opinion among the Greek elites and the Greek public that the welfare state was doing well in the past, and now it is under attack. And that's why if you link this idea with the idea that the Greek government, which is also a false idea, that the Greek government is totally innocent of all measures which have been taken, and that all measures are the result of pressure from the outside, from the EU, you arrive at the percentage which you correctly spotted, that EU is a threat to the Greek state.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll have to call matters to an end. I must say, part of the discussion here has given me a sense of a sense of a second coming, as it were, on Sunday, that we're having a discussion here in the expectation that as of Monday we'll be in a different world or whatever. A kind of epiphany will happen. We have three events coming up, just to remind you. 3rd of February, the restructuring of the Greek economy, Panastokoglou. Public debates on the Greek elections on the Thursday, the 5th of February. What do the Greek elections mean for Greece's future? And then on the 12th of February, the annual lecture, the Greek economy, current developments and future prospects, given by Yanis Tanaris. But as we close, can you join me in thanking our speaker very much indeed? Thank you.